Welcome to the latest Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast, brought to you from the Aquarium Rush Studios in downtown Grand Rapids, Michigan. My name is Ben.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Charles.
Today we are going to talk about a group of saltwater fish that has intrigued me since I was but a wee little lad. I've been interested in this group of fish, like literally forever. In fact, I have one of my old books here. This was published in 1990. It's Marine Aquarium and Miniature Reef Aquarium. By Dr. C.W. Emmers. And I really started to appreciate this group of fish based on that book. It was really hard to find a lot of good information on them, but books seem to be the source. Before we get into it, though,
we have to do our shameless plug. If you've been listening to the podcast, you should already know to go to watercolorsaquariumgallery.com to buy live plants, to buy some cool merch, and to buy aquarium supplies, probably stuff that we've already mentioned on the podcast several times. So go there and do that.
How many plants are up there right now?
Right now, I think we have 20, but I've got a lot more to add. So I took a bunch of pictures. I'm going to add them up with pictures tonight and add descriptions later on so that we can get them as fast as possible.
So. And then our cool merch.
Yes, which we sold a couple of cool Epistogramma agassizii merch items this week.
Oh, Epistogrammas, huh? Mm-hmm. Whose design is that, by the way?
It's yours. It looks great. It got the t-shirt and the sticker.
Sweet. Well, whoever bought those, thank you. All right. The whole time I'm doing research for this topic and reading as much as I possibly can and getting my books out, my whole intention was to not be mean or go on any kind of rants or get frustrated with anybody, but I couldn't do it. So if you do a search, by the way, we're talking about butterfly fish. This is saltwater butterfly fish.
I think it would be butterfly fishes.
Butterfly fishes. Thank you. I appreciate that. This would be fish in the family, Catodontidae, something like that, depending on which particular one you're talking about. But it's the butterfly fishes, 130 different species, 12 different genera, lots of variation, but I'm just going to start out with a quote. And oh, by the way, this is from, so I did Google search butterfly fishes. And this was the number two. Like, I want to learn about butterflies. I'm going to read this website, the number two thing that came up in my Google search. This is a quote. And I want you guys, you two, to tell me how many things are wrong with this statement, even though you are not super familiar, but somewhat familiar with the family of fish, Catodontidae. Okay? I'm going to start out. For the standard butterfly fish, the size of the tank largely depends on the number of fish to be stocked. A school of five can comfortably be housed in a 100-gallon tank. They should also have sizable live rocks and plenty of corals with enough cave-like crevices. These must be well arranged to offer it sufficient swimming space. Sand can be added to the substrate too. How many things were wrong with that?
Were there any things right with that?
four or five, depending on whether you want to count putting corals in with them as either you're giving them a natural food source or you just think that's a safe thing to do. That's completely
it would
wrong.
Be good for them. If they didn't already kill each other from being five random butterfly fish stuffed into a 100-gallon tank together. I'm not convinced this person's ever kept a reef tank, to be honest.
I know. And so here's the next quote. They are vulnerable to disease, especially if the tank does not meet specific requirements. Oh, you're going to love this next part, Charles. Use cleaner fish to help keep the tank hygienic.
Oh, geez.
Butterfly fish is a schooling fish. It adores the company of its lookalike. Okay, so this is The Aquarium Guide by Adam Edmond. I don't call people out. Adam Edmond, if you are listening to this podcast, if you have any way of getting in touch with us, please contact us and defend these statements because I am genuinely pissed off at you. You are responsible for killing fish. you need to completely revamp or eliminate your theaquariumguide.com.
Yeah. A lot of these types of places that I've found are, they're just like link farms where they're trying to like drive SEO to a certain place. So they just put in a lot of words that they know that people are going to be looking for. And it always ends up being complete nonsense because they're writing it to be searched for, not to communicate any useful information. Like, that's what this strikes me as. Cause yeah. It is complete nonsense.
This
like,
guy's got a book.
He's got a book.
He's got a book.
He really put a lot of effort into this. Yeah. Did he try?
It's not a butterfly fish book. I mean, this is like a full on, learn about aquariums going and go all to this in. Website, right?
Wow. Okay,
back to the original quote, right? For the standard butterfly fish, there's the first incorrect statement, right? Saying the standard butterfly fish, I don't know how, let's say we're going to go with the standard dog. No, worse than that. Because they
The standard canine.
The standard canine.
Okay, are we talking about a pug or are we talking about a fox?
But at least pugs and foxes eat mostly the same food, right? So that's even...
Right.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. The size largely depends on the number of fish to be stocked. Sure. A school, right? Listen to podcast number, what was it? 89, 88, something like that. About how we feel about
schooling reef fishes.
Okay. Standard size, average sizes for butterfly fish range from 4 to 11 inches. Let's go with 4-inch fish, which, by the way, they're not going to stay that small. They're going to get to 6 inches. 5-6-inch saltwater fish in a 100-gallon tank. Sir Adam Edmund, shut the... I stopped myself.
Put it together. Talk to us in a month.
Yeah. Come on. Let's have him on the show. Let's reach out and have him on the show. I'm almost serious about that. I gotta calm down. I'm getting on myself all worked up. Jeez. Sizable live rock and plenty of coral. Charles mentioned that one a little bit.
Yeah, right? they like to eat coral, and I'm going to be honest, that's the extent of most of what I know about them.
So none of them would be considered 100% reef safe, but really who's 100% reef safe? There are some of them that I would be very comfortable putting in many reef tanks. There are many of them, and about half of the species in the genus Caetodon, which is the biggest genus in the family, about half of them are what we call obligatory carnivores. What does that mean?
That they need to. Yeah,
there's no choice. They have to eat coral.
Exactly. So I like the way that you said that, Charles. Sure, you can put them in with plenty of corals if you want to provide a natural food source.
It kind of reminds me of people who are like, oh, well, your plants just die every few months and then you replace them. Like, oh, yeah. You're trying to feed your fish, load it up with corals, and don't worry about it. And then you buy all new corals in 3 months.
Yeah.
So, the whole point of that was there's a lot of misinformation out there in butterfly fish. And if you really... So this podcast, here's what I'm hoping to accomplish with this podcast. I'm hoping somebody out there gets excited and wants to get into butterfly fish. I'm also betting there are going to be a lot of people that are going to go, you know, I was thinking about a butterfly fish, but not anymore.
Yeah. Especially when we get to the copper band portion of the conversation, right. Which is the one that everybody wants. We're going to be bursting some bubbles there, maybe.
Burst some bubbles. Yeah. Don't worry, I was very fair when it came to copper bands.
Yeah.
Right. For those of you that are really thinking about getting into it, it was very difficult for me to find websites out there that provided information that I considered reliable and accurate information. Bob Fenner, the late great Bob Fenner, did a MACNA talk on butterfly fish in 2016, and it's a great talk, and he's pretty realistic about that. Bob was a super realistic. If you're not familiar with Bob Fenner, author of The Conscientious Marine Aquarium, co-author of Reef Invertebrates, and I feel like he's got one other book out there. He passed away a few years ago. It was a huge loss and a sudden loss to the aquarium hobby.
I have to imagine he wrote many articles for Coral Magazine.
Tons.
I have to. Yeah.
For lots of lots of magazines. I had the privilege of hanging out with him for a weekend, and that dude is just, I mean, he's like the Energizer Bunny. Just go, 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 go. Yeah, he was great. So I did have to rely on books to back up a lot of, I do have experience with butterfly fish. I've kept a number of different species and I love them, but to really get the facts and everything right, not everything right, because I always get lots of things wrong, but to get lots of things right, two books in particular. One of them is Old, written by Gerald Allen, who, if you go look at aquarium books from the 80s and 90s, about half of them were written by Gerald Allen. This one was published in 1985. Yes, I had to go back that far. And then Scott Michaels' book, Angels and Butterflies. Scott Michaels is a prolific author who does lots of book series on particular groups of fish. And now those are the two. And that's the best information out there on butterfly fish.
Yeah, they have almost this like mythological status to me, where it's hard to gather information. So many of them have all these mysterious habits that you've got to figure out. And they're all just so cool. Like every single butterfly fish pretty much that I've seen, I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I don't know how to take care of that.
Or I know exactly how to take care of that. And I'm not willing to.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think if you go through Scott Michaels' book, he has pictures of the few boring ones. And of the 130 or so species, I think there's four of them that would go, oh, that's just kind of gray. The rest of them are some of the most beautifully colored fish in the ocean. I would say if you want to talk about groups, angelfish might be prettier, but butterflies they're darn close.
I feel like angels have a wider variety of color, but for me with butterfly fish, a lot of it is like pattern and like their profile. Some of them have such a unique look to them.
The silhouette.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
So you should do a color one and I should do a line one.
Oh, that would be fun. Mm-hmm. Like those cross hatches that some of them have would be a really cool shape.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
In Bob's talk and in one of Bob's articles, he talks about dividing butterfly fish into three categories. Scott Michaels divides them into five categories. And I think it's a pretty good way to do it. Bob's three categories are, these guys are good. They're pretty easy. These guys are a pain in the ass, but might be worth it. And these guys don't bother with. Right? Scott Michaels is it's a scale of 1 to 5. And if it's a 5, it's like, hey, that's a pretty hardy, pretty easy fish. A 4 is, yeah, you could probably pull that one off. A 3 is, ooh, you need to know what you're doing. But you might be able to make that one work. A 2 is, wow, expert only. And a 1 is, don't bother. I don't like the don't bother word. But with some of the butterfly fish, it's necessary. I believe one of the big breeders just started working with one of the obligatory carnivores.
I don't know about any of the like big like companies, but I do know that like Matt Patterson has experimented a little bit with them. He's got a Macna talk called Rethinking Corallivores, and it's basically just like the idea of like how do you make a corallivore work. And a lot of that talk is very much dedicated to butterflies, and he has a couple obligatory, I think two at the time of that talk, obligate corallivores that he had going for like 3, 4, 5 years.
That's good. I think he was working with melons and the ornates or something like that, right? I don't remember exactly what it was, but that is exactly who I was thinking of.
Yeah.
When I was at big breeders, I was talking about big names in the breeding.
Got it.
Not
commercial
companies.
Breeders, yeah. Necessarily. Although copper bands are being done now.
Copper bands and the black banded. Hmm. Both of those have been successfully bred.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like some of that, like, don't even touch it, is just history, right? Like, now we have more technology, so some of those things do get a little bit more approachable. Mm-hmm.
If you've got a butterfly fish that only eats SPS corals, of which there are a substantial number of absolutely incredibly gorgeous butterfly fish, that is all they eat. That's it.
Yeah. Right?
And I believe those are some of the ones that Matt Patterson was working with.
I think so. I watched that talk like 2 years ago during lockdown.
So that is a fish that someone could prove to me what they're doing, and I would get that butterfly fish for them.
Yeah.
Like, they'd have to show me that they're growing a significant amount of Acropora and Monopora corals to feed their butterfly fish. If you can't grow a significant amount of Acropora and Monopora corals enough to keep them alive, you will kill the fish. Yeah. Period.
And that's with it. Those corals, like, it might be feasible. Mm-hmm. Like, they grow so fast. If you're growing a lot of coral and fragging, you do end up with some extra, but how much do you need? A lot.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of nutritional value in coral polyps, right? So they are constantly grazing on coral polyps.
Now, this is just a thought. This is not me. I wonder what percentage of their diet would need to be it. Like, if it's like cleaner wrasses where they need that slime coat, or there's something, you know what I mean? Like, if half their diet was something like a gel food and the other half was coral, would that be enough to be able to, for them to function properly? I don't know butterfly fish is enough to know, but it is a thought for people to look into the scientific literature and see if there's information about it.
I would propose a really cool experiment. First, it would have to start with somebody who is growing piles and piles of acros, right? Take some dead acro skeletons that look just like the ones you're feeding to your butterfly, because that's what you got to start with. And then start spreading mastic or some other gel food on those skeletons and put them in the tank and see if you can adapt it over, and then see, like you said, is that enough? Getting one to eat gel food, I don't think that would be impossible. I don't know.
Yeah, I know people have done like file fishes and other stuff doing that same thing. Mm-hmm. And I have to imagine Matt Patterson had to have been doing that at least a little bit.
Yeah. So if you look in Gerald Allen's book, he's got a great grid, and we have that out in front of me. And he goes through the different species and puts little X's on what they eat. Mm-hmm. Right. And there are obligatory corallivores that eat some other things, but also need corals in their diet. There are also, according to his book, obligatory corallivores. That's all they eat. That's it.
This is sounding like a group of fishes that doing your homework and knowing which species you have is incredibly beneficial
that
to what you're doing.
That is 100% true. And don't worry if you're like, well, butterfly fish are impossible. I can't keep them. Don't click off yet, because I'm going to get to what Bob Fenner and Scott Michaels both would say are, and some of them I've kept personally and would completely agree, there are some butterfly fish that are, I'm going to even use the word easy. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think one of them was even mentioned in our top 10 beginner fish, or top 5 beginner fish.
If it's not, it easily could have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are definitely butterfly fish species that we have nearly 100% success with over time. So,
So which order do you want to go in? You want to go from the worst to the best? Or the best to the worst?
I would like to go worst to best, I think.
To best. That's what I was thinking too.
But can I raise my hand and ask, there's one species of butterfly fish that I know the name of that we've never gotten in, and I'm too impatient to know where it is in this.
Which one?
The Pakistani butterfly.
That actually, both Bob and Scott, have I kept it? Yes, I've tried it. That gets a yes.
I think we've had that one here once.
We did, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah,
but just not with me.
It's just rare, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
Not reef safe.
Okay.
They do eat coral, but they don't have to. They're actually on the top 10 species list for both Scott and for Bob Fenner and for Gerald Allen. Yeah, Bob Fenner specifically mentioned them in his Macna talk. So I would say yes. Pakistanis, which is Ketodon kolari, or kolari. It's C. O-L-L-A-R-E.
Okay.
That'd be Kalari?
I think so.
Kalari? Kalari?
I think it's Kalari.
Something like that. Yeah. Gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get like, what would you call that? Deep red? That's not a deep red. It's like a
rust?
It's like a, rust? It's like, I would say like a,
yeah.
like a sunset amber color.
Ooh, that sounds nice.
Well done.
Yeah.
Now I want one. Yeah, they're gorgeous. So taxonomically, right? We talked about 130 species. 130 species, 12 genera. The most common, or I should say the genera that contains the most species is Chittidon. 114 species in Chittidon currently.
So like 90% of them?
Yeah, it's 114 in Chittidon, and then like 3 or 4 in Heniochus, and 2 in Kelmon, and Kelmonops, I think, is one other species. And then 2 other genera that you never see in the hobby. Who am I missing? Oh, the one that contains another group that's a very viable reef one is, I gotta get this name right because it's one of those fun names to pronounce. Hematerichthys.
Oh, what a nice name.
Yes, yes, Hematerichthys. So, yeah, and there's some, we'll get into those in a little bit of detail, but they are, they would definitely be considered the most reef safe-ish of the butterfly group. And gorgeous.
I love a pyramid.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're really cool. The non-reef safe ones, I hate to say it this way, but I think they're the prettiest.
It's kind of how a lot of that crap works out sometimes, isn't it?
Right.
Things that eat corals look like corals.
Yeah. There's kind of three main groups in that. There's the ones that have the really pretty pinstriping, which is Ornatus and Lunulatus, and it's the melon butterfly is the one that I always think of. And in fact, Gerald Allen argues that they're all the same species, and Warren Burgess argues, no, they're different species. But they've all got this like really similar, just an elegance to them and a pearlescence to their sheen that just...
I'm looking up pictures so I can admire them with you.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. I've never seen the Ornatus before. That's sweet.
They're amazing. Yeah. And if you look at Ornatus, and I think it's Lunulatus, that are they're hard to distinguish.
Here, yep. Wait. Can you spare this one so Charles can look too?
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know if your phone's...
Ornatus is actually not in that group. Trifasciatus, Lunulatus, and Astriacus. The exquisite, the melon, and the pinstripe.
Oh, yeah.
Hard to distinguish.
Still gorgeous.
Oh, gorgeous. Ornatus is one that I've seen one of the ones from that group. And at first, I always called it a melon out in Thailand. But now I have to figure out exactly which one it was because it probably wasn't a melon. I saw a different one in that same group in Hawaii. And then I have seen Ornatus in Hawaii as well. And they're stunning. They're just... You stop and feel like you're in the presence of royalty when you see those fish swim by.
They don't look real.
They don't. The other group is the orange face ones, and that's how's this for a scientific name? It's Chittidon baronessa, like baron or
wow.
Baroness. Yeah, and it should be. They're gorgeous. And then the orange face, which is Lavardus, Chittidon Lavardus.
Wow, these all look like if you gave like a coloring sheets to kids and said everybody fill it in and they all came up with their own different pattern.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then Myers is in that group, Bennett's is in that group. Gorgeous, but I think that they're probably a little bit like seahorses, right? Seahorses are extremely hardy organisms if you can feed them.
Yeah.
And my suspicion with this group of butterflies is going to be the same thing, but feeding them constant, uninterrupted supply of live coral.
Yeah.
That's it. And there's no other options. There's no other way around it that we know of so far.
Yeah. Sad.
Yep.
Definitely wary of anything, any project where if anything goes wrong, it all falls apart,
yeah,
right?
You better have backups, right? Like 2 or 3 reef tanks that are not connected.
Yeah.
Growing enough coral to feed these fish.
A crash can happen in one of your other tanks at any point.
And then you need to run down to your local fish store and get some feeder acros.
Yeah, for like $400 or something.
I'm going to be honest. I want to be part of that industry. That sounds cool.
Yeah, really, guys. Yeah. Let's start selling some feeder acros.
That would be... I'm actually on board with that idea.
The most obligate live food you can possibly have. No, you have to come here every week.
Right.
Are marsh idols like butterfly adjacent, or are they a butterfly?
No.
Not even close.
No. They are not a butterfly. They are not a tang. They are a monotypic family.
Wow.
It starts with a Z. I don't remember. Bastard? No, I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm going to look it up.
Yes, but they are a monotypic family. They might even go one step further. Like, there's nothing like Morris idols, and they're all the same species, and they're found from the east coast of Africa to the what to yeah are they in Catalina? They're found all the way to Hawaii. I'm honestly not sure if they're found in the southern part or the central part of the Pacific Ocean. I don't know. I think they are. I think they're in Costa Rica.
We'll put an addendum on this.
Yeah, we
will. Yes, they are the sole species in the family Zancladae.
Zancladae, that's
yes. It. Genus Zanclus.
I only bring them up because I was reminded of, this has to be like 40 episodes back, but yeah. Amy brought up like the only healthy marsh idols she's ever seen are in reef tanks that have like 5,000 gallons of coral or more.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that sounds a lot like a butterfly.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. They're another one of those fish that there are a few success stories out there, and only in giant tanks.
Thankfully, they have a butterfly mimic that is way easier to take care of.
Yeah.
What is that?
Heniocus.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Bannerfish.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'll get to all the fun names on that one.
Oh, just really? We're skipping steps
I'm
here.
I'm sorry. I completely diverted you.
So I would put the challenges of a Morris idol at a similar level to the challenges of the obligatory coralivore butterfly fish. I would order in a Morris idol for someone sooner than I would order in a melon butterfly.
Interesting.
Yep. I think it's an easier unlock, for lack of a better way to describe it, right? And so I would describe those fish like 30 years ago, and Bob Fenner actually mentions this in his talk. 30 years ago, 40 years ago, discus were considered almost impossible to keep. And 50 years ago, they were considered, don't even bother, they're all going to die, right? Eventually, discus got unlocked. And that's kind of been what's happening with a lot of the fish that we keep. This fish is really hard. Oh, no, it turns out if you do this, this, and this, this fish does just fine, right? They get unlocked. And I think the unlock for a Moorish idol is more attainable than it is for a melon butterfly.
From what I've understood with them, the issue isn't necessarily figuring out the one thing they need. It's being able to get them everything they need because they eat a huge variety.
Right.
Like they eat sponges, they eat like worms and stuff like that. They eat coral, they eat zooplankton. So you have to fill all those niches for them to have everything they need.
The first Morris idol I saw was in a harbor in gross water. The second one I saw was out on an absolutely gorgeous, pristine reef.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah. They live in so many different places. Right.
That's why I think the unlock is easier. There were no live corals for at least a half a mile of where the fish in the harbor was found.
Wow.
Right? But they are known to eat coral.
Yeah.
They do that. Yeah.
So there's got to be some secret there that would just be, hey, let's make more shiitake food. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think that's it. More shiitake food. Maybe somebody can pull that off with one of the butterflies someday. Maybe work a mastic or a gel food that can be spread onto a coral. And we know with a lot of different fish that and this is how orange spot filefish were unlocked, right? They started, and I think it was Matt Pedersen, started spreading gel foods onto dead coral skeletons.
Mm-hmm.
And for the Orange Spot File, it wasn't that they needed coral in their diet as much as it was, they need some, right? But as much as it was, they need what they recognize as food. And as soon as they got that, oh, this is food. I'm good. And if somebody wants an Orange Spot File fish, I would order one for somebody.
Yeah, taking a fish that's probably never been more than 6 inches away from an Acropora, putting it in a tank and telling it, oh, eat this instead.
Right.
Like, it doesn't know.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so on to back to butterfly fish. That's, you know, that's why we're here tonight, right?
The Moorish shadow was good to bring up, though.
It was. It was. They're another fish that was a holy grail fish for me. And again, because of the book, let's mention it again. This would be Marine Aquaria and Miniature Reefs, published in 1990. It's an old book. Okay, so we talked about Bob Fenner. We talked about Scott Michaels. Talked about taxonomy. They are found in all of the tropical oceans, always associated, mostly always associated with coral reefs. There are something like 13 different subgenera in the genus Catodon. And that has value because when you look at, you know, I talked about the obligatory corallivores. Three of those are in one subgenera, three of those are in another subgenera, and there's one other subgenera that is also all obligatory corallivores. When you start looking at the easy ones, they're also in their own subgenera. So dividing those, and I'm not going to go into the details of here's the 13 different subgenera in every species. No, that's not that important, right? But looking at, if you're interested in butterfly fish and you know, hey, I've heard this one is pretty easy, look at what subgenera it is in, and the other ones in that group also have a higher likelihood to be easy, or at least easier. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
You want to talk about copper bands now, Amy?
We can. Wait, where are we? Because we talked about the impossible.
Yes.
I guess a copper band is probably a good medium, right?
Bob Fenner puts it in group 2. Scott Michaels puts it as a 3, right? A 3 on a scale of 1 to 5. Bob Fenner puts it in on a 2. Like, if you're willing to put a lot of work in. So let me just talk a little bit about what Bob Fenner's scale means.
Yeah.
Okay. Because he was always a little hyper-realistic. And sometimes a little on the rough side. And for him, the low, I don't remember now if it was 1 or 3, that was his bad one, right? But his bad ones meant they would die within the first month.
No.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
Bob's number 2, and this is something to feel very strongly about when you're thinking about whether or not you are worthy, yes, I'm using the word worthy, of taking out a butterfly fish, okay? Bob has spent a lot of time working in the hobby and a lot of time working with wholesalers and collectors and on that side of the hobby and watched a lot more fish die than I have.
Which is saying something.
Yeah, you know, right? Yeah. And Bob was pretty cynical about it, and I think appropriately so. We need to be a little cynical about, you know, this is real. We need to be a little realistic. So for Bob to put something on a 2 list, it meant that at least a bunch of them would live for 3 months. That's all it took for Bob to give him a 2.
That just means it's possible.
Right.
Like, at all.
Yes. Copper bands.
Yeah, they're pretty solidly in that to me, too.
Right.
I wonder, too, if they're the secret to the rest of it. Because I think the biggest struggle we have with copper bands more than anything else is stress.
Yes. And Bob would say that it has way more to do with how it's handled before it gets to a store than once it gets to a store or after it leaves the store.
Yeah.
You should be able to look at a copper band in a store and say, that one's going to die or that one's not going to die.
Yeah, but sometimes it feels like by the time they even get to us, they're dead fish swimming. If they're thin when they get to us, if they haven't eaten for a week, doesn't matter how many months we feed them,
right,
they're still probably not going to make it.
Yep.
copper bands that we put through quarantine for 4 weeks that have been eating for three. If we move them, they stop eating sometimes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they never start eating again. Mm-hmm. So that margin for these fish is just so narrow. I mean, everybody's heard us talk about mandarins so many times. Right. But for copper bands, I think it might even be harder. Just because it seems like mandarins can take 3 or 4 weeks without food and copper bands can't.
Yeah, true.
At least by the time they get to us.
I think with a copper band, it's not so much that they can take 3 or 4 weeks without food more than a mandarin can. I think it's the reason that they stop eating more than it is the they went without food. And a lot of Bob's talk was about how butterflies, particularly copper bands, are handled when they are shipped. And the long rostrum that copper bands use to get into those tiny little crevices, that long rostrum is delicate. And it can get bruised easy. And if it's bruised, it swells. And if it swells, food doesn't go past it, right? And so what you end up with is not just a butterfly that doesn't feel like eating because they're butterfly fish and they tend to get temperamental, but it can't physically swallow anymore, or it can't swallow enough. So you could see it take food and then it stops. And this is a classic one. Like, a healthy copper band butterfly fish is going to eat like a damsel or a clownfish. You're going to put food in the tank and it is going to push fish out of the way to get to more food. But if their rostrum is damaged and swollen, they're going to grab a piece of food and you're going to think, oh, they're not that interested. They're swimming away. Well, they're not swimming away because they're not interested in food. They can't swallow it.
Right.
So it's the shipping. That's the big deal. Shipping, collection, all of those things.
Yeah.
Ship them on their side, according to Bob, as opposed to up and down. If they're on their side, they go to sleep. They rest. If they're up, they're upright. They're stressed out. They're in a box. They're covered. They're not getting food. They're using more oxygen. They're using more energy. All of those things.
They're more likely to thrash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So when we're talking about shipping stresses, we're not just talking about those things that, like with a person, when you're stressed out, it's really not physical damage. It causes physical harm, but it's not physical damage. When we're talking about shipping stresses, we're talking about not only physical or stresses, but actual physical damage.
Mm-hmm.
And with a copper band with that big, huge, long rostrum, that can be a big deal. That could be a deal breaker.
Yeah. It's one that I get a lot of pushback on because there are so many success stories. Like,
right.
If you get past 3 months...
3 months, that's the magic number.
Then you're solid and you have a fish that's going to do just fine.
Should live for 10 to 12 years. If it makes it 3 months, it should live 10 to 12 years.
Yeah, and it often does.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
The number that don't make it to 1 month and then the number that die between 1 and 3 is astronomical.
It's huge and sad.
Yeah.
That's one I've not given up on. I'm not ready to get another one in until we have some other things in place, but I haven't given up on it yet.
The reverting is what kills me, because sometimes even after they go home, they just won't even look at food again.
Right.
After they've been with us for 2 months.
Yep.
That's the part that how do we solve that?
Yeah. The number of success stories don't mean that much to me. And I think the reality is a lot of people are like, look at all these success stories. And I'm like, okay, but how many failures are we not hearing about?
Thank you.
Because if we have 1,000 successes, okay, is that out, like, is that 5% of the attempts, or is that 90% of the attempts? Because that's a very different number depending on which statistic it is.
If you escaped a fire that killed 90% of the other people in that building, is that a success story?
It wasn't that bad. I survived.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a small world philosophy, right? If it doesn't affect me, then it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. I hope that captive breeding is going to help us understand better what we need to do for them. It's hard for me to call captive bred saltwater fish a solution most of the time.
I know, it's not there yet. It's getting there. It's getting better.
It'll be there when we have large populations of adults to select from, but we don't.
Yeah, it's true.
What? Charles is smirking at me.
Or until, you know, people raise them up to the proper size before they sell them.
Right now, I think just demand is so much higher than supply that people are clamoring and they're just willing to accept a crappy alternative.
Right. Yeah. But they shouldn't.
They shouldn't. No, they should demand healthy fish that can go in their tanks right away.
Copper bands are something that I've probably worked with 15 or 20 of them over the last 15 years or so. And it was interesting that both Bob and one of the other videos that I watched about copper bands kind of helped put a finger on something that I'd never thought of before. And both of them talked about each copper band butterfly needs to be treated individually, right? So you might have one that is eating well but has some kind of damage. You might have one that's going to eat mysis shrimp right away but never going to eat anything else. You might have one that eats whatever and is going to do great. You might have one. One of the authors I read talked about one of the copper bands that he worked with that he did get past the 3-month mark would only eat one brand of mysis shrimp. Right?
Just eat.
Treat them like, yeah, I know, right? But treat them like individuals.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that we work on here as we put fish through quarantine. And that's part of why we have Nick, as Nick's job is to look at fish individually. I think that's something that we miss. And I read that right after I had read the statement about that, the generalizations about butterfly fish, mm-hmm. You know, so that the juxtaposition of those two statements, just like, okay.
Somebody who has no idea what they're talking about says you can treat them all the same. Somebody who knows what they're talking about says, you know, you need to know your fish and the tastes that it enjoys.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Another fish that Bob puts in that category and that Scott Michaels puts at the 3 level is the long-nosed butterfly, which is something that I would say mm-hmm. we've done notably better than copper bands.
Definitely.
But not... I think that's an accurate statement, just a little bit on the good side of the 3 as opposed to the copper band on the bad side of the 3. Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about that? I have the page open to the long-nosed butterfly.
Yes, please.
And that genus name is amazing, by the way.
Forsypiger?
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Tweezer face.
Tweezer face. Yeah. What's the... Is it Longrus? Forsypiger longrus something?
Oh, the long nose is Flavomyces.
Oh, so that's yellow.
Oh, the yellow long nose.
Yellow long nose.
There's another one.
There's another one that's
holy
really
crap.
Similar.
Okay. Forsypinger longirostris.
Oh, so the long nose tweezer face. That might be my new favorite scientific name.
That's a really good one. Oh, yeah, that's... I mean,
draw your sword, you long-nosed tweeter face.
Oh, no.
Like, do we need to say anything else? That's what they are. Now you know.
Yeah. Both of those are on the nicer side of the reef-safe scale. Mm-hmm. And I would say the long nose a little less likely to pick at corals than a copper band. I would not put either of those with anemones. And I wouldn't put them with a $500 ACAM.
I wouldn't put them in with any clown with heft because my experience with anemone fishes and butterflies is that anemone fish do not discriminate. All butterflies are bad.
Oh, they recognize those. Yeah. Right? That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Long nose are one that I will work with on a little more regular basis. I would put those with any soft coral without worrying about it. Leathers, mushrooms.
Probably not zoanthids, though. Just because they're too anemone-y, or...
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. Hmm. I would try it. We have some cheap zoanthids.
True.
Yeah, I would experiment with that.
If someone comes to me and it's just like, I have a smoke ton of zoas and I just want something to eat them.
Yeah.
There you go.
Long-nosed butterfly.
Oh, yeah.
But I only wanted to eat certain zoas. Okay, you tell them.
Only brown.
Again, with those more challenging butterfly fish, watch them eat. And that's what we do here. I talked about Nick a little bit with him going downstairs into the quarantine department. And part of his job is to go down there and put food in tanks and watch every fish eat.
And if you're shopping for one, it is 100% appropriate for you to ask the store to feed them.
Yes. If they say no, say, okay, thank you, and move on to the next place. Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about the fun ones. I mean, okay, they're all fun. But let's talk about the ones that are easier.
Like the pyramids?
Yeah, pyramids. So pyramids get, according to Bob, they get a one. According to Scott Michaels, they get a two. Mm-mm. A little more on the challenging side. And that seems to have a lot to do with collection location. The closer to Australia you get with the pyramid, that'd be the yellow, which is Hemipterichthys polylepis.
Do you mean a four for Scott?
Yes, I'm sorry, a four.
Okay, just making sure we're... So, I was like, wait a minute.
I had that backwards. So a five is his easy ones, a one is his difficult ones.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, that's exactly what I mean. And then the black pyramid, which is Hemipterichthys zoster, also called the zoster butterfly. So again, those are considered the most reef safe. The most reef safe butterflies, they're, and really most fish that are considered pretty close to reef safe, the high risk corals are going to be the fleshy LPS corals. The fleshy soft corals typically taste really bad. Like leather corals, there's a lot of obligatory coelivores that won't even look at a leather coral. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of angelfish that'll nip at all kinds of corals and won't even think about a leather coral. Mushroom anemones are another one that very, very few things eat. Although there is a butterfly fish that specializes in eating mushroom corals. And I think, which one was that? Oh, the double saddleback. Catadon ulitiensis, which I wonder if Vagabond and there's one other in that complex or in that subgenera that I wonder if they also would go after mushroom corals. But mushroom corals are one of those that mushroom anemones, mushroom corals, depending on how you look at it. That's something that not very many things eat.
No.
But there are butterflies that do. Those are also butterflies that both Bob and Scott give a yes, those are good hardy butterflies. They're gorgeous. They are not reef safe at all. Yeah, they are going to eat your coral. Pakistani, he puts in that group. They're going to eat stony coral. The teardrop he puts in that group, which is Catadon unimaculatus, that one looks very similar to the double saddleback. The threadfin I already mentioned, they're going to eat coral. Pearl scale, another one that's super easy, super hardy, probably going to chew on some corals. In the genus Catadon, what I would consider, and actually in the entire family, what I would consider the hardiest of the butterfly, and the one that we mentioned earlier that was probably in our top five easiest beginner fish, was the Klein's butterfly.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
Those are just hardy fish.
Mm-hmm. That's the one I think we do have near 100% with. They're just adorable and easygoing. Easygoing's not a word you use to describe many butterfly fish.
Right. Yeah, that one fits it.
Yeah, I was just remarking that I was like, wow, I kind of forgot about those because they don't give me problems.
No. Right. And you're not sacrificing anything. I mean, they still have that great yellow. They have a really good stripe on them. They're just a good fish to try.
The millet butterfly, the lemon butterfly, and there's one other one. I can't remember what it is. They're all in that same subgenus. I haven't tried the lemon seed, I think. I have tried that one. Easy.
Yeah.
Not quite as common, not quite as available as the Klein's, but easy, should be tried, should be kept. I've seen them in reef tanks. I think they're described as, this is one of the words out there, reef safe with caution.
Yes.
What does that mean? Right?
Semi-aggressive.
Community fish with caution.
What I do like about that is it says, there's some corals they're going to eat, but there's lots of them that they won't.
Yeah.
And at some point, hopefully, there'll be enough people and enough resources out there to do the experimentation with each species. And it has to be on a species level, right? Each species has to be gone through and kept with 10 different coral species to say, oh, they don't eat that. Oh, they did eat that, right?
Hey, I think this is a great time for you to talk about that, what is it, a multicolor angel that you and Allie spent I don't know how long experimenting with and then in the display tank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Multicolors are definitely one of those that are considered, that is Centropyge multicolor, one of the dwarf angel species that a lot of the books say they're not really very coral safe. And so we did an experiment and we put them in one of the tanks in our coral system that was an isolated box. And I think we tried 7 or 8 different types of coral with it.
At least. I think we tried to find representations for like at least the different body types of coral. Yeah. Like little polyps, plating corals, sticks.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I think it just ate some zoanthids maybe.
Spaghetti leathers. It ate spaghetti leathers.
But hear me out. That brown zoa population has slowly shrunk in the last year.
Oh, is it going down?
I'm not complaining about that.
No, yeah. Need to go away.
That angel looks awesome.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's a gorgeous mm-hmm. fish. And I think that's something that hopefully at some point the hobby moved towards, where we're going to not just tune our fish around our corals, but tune our corals around our fish and say, okay, I love this fish. It's going to eat some coral. It's not going to eat them all. Just leave that one out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. What's the list of corals in there just to really drive this home? There's a chalice coral. There's your prize bubble coral. Mm-hmm. There's a toadstool leather.
There's acans.
There's acans. Mm-hmm. There's Duncan's. Mm-hmm. There's that purple photosynthetic sponge.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff that I would consider incredibly high risk for a corallivore.
Oh, there's also a torch coral in mm-hmm. there.
Yes. Not touching.
Torch, hammer. There's frog spawn in there too, actually, I think.
Yeah.
So that's it's amazing.
Yeah.
But I'm still hesitant to say multicolor angels only eat zoas and spaghetti leathers because, I mean, reef safe with caution. I know yellow tangs that eat corals. I know, you know, just pay attention.
I feel like that this is that kind of thing where, like, people just have to experiment more, though. Like, if you really want a flame angel, like, you have to experiment with what it'll eat. Like the, what was it? Burton, he took home one and it started eating. And I can't remember for the life of me what coral it was.
I think it was one of his brains. Ooh. Like a fancy, expensive coral.
Yeah, I remember the coral being more expensive than the fish.
But it was one that most people would consider unlikely for a flame angel to eat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Flame angels and acroporas are a notorious bad combination.
Yeah.
But it was that specific angel would eat that specific coral.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what would you say about multicolors? Oh, they don't eat these corals, but they do eat these. No, I would say our multicolor doesn't eat these corals, but does eat these corals. And that's a challenge.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm just saying, Ben and I are both humans, but you leave us unattended with different foods for various length of times. So there's varying degrees of which one of us will steal it.
You can have all the chocolate mint you want.
But, you know, eventually you might think about trying something that you wouldn't have 6 months ago.
Exactly. Anyways.
A couple of other fish in that one group before we get into some of the most common ones in the easy to keep group. The wrought iron is considered easy, but that is like a $400 or $500 butterfly. It's incredible.
Can I have a photo?
Yeah.
That's a cool name, by the way.
Yeah, wrought iron. And if you see it, you go, oh yeah, that is a wrought iron butterfly. They look almost like they're a mechanical robot.
Oh, it looks like your cichlid from last week.
Oh, it kind of does, doesn't it?
A little bit. Yeah. Oh, what a cool picture.
And that's definitely one that is considered reef safe with caution.
I'm a sucker for a fish that's got those like well-defined margins on their scales. Oh, so cool.
The subgenus Rhoops are another group in Catodon that are expensive but hardy. That includes the Declevis, the Burgess, the Tinkeri. Usually safe with soft corals and SPS corals, but LPS corals can be a risk. Try them on an individual basis. I know a number of SPS keepers that say, put those in my SPS tank all day long because they're great. Gorgeous, a little on the expensive side, where the wrought iron is going to be a $400 to $600 fish. Was it a Burgess or a Declevis?
We had a Declevis for a while.
I think that was a $200 and some fish.
Yeah. I think it might have been like closer to $300.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, that one was really cool. They're less of like a golden yellow that some of them have and almost more highlighter yellow.
Yeah.
Really pretty.
The raccoon butterfly is considered an easy one. The aruga, which is another one that's in that vagabondum. Yeah. There's another group of butterfly fish that is really common in the hobby. And it was kind of fun when I was like, okay, what should we call this one? Because around here, we usually call it Heniochus,
mm-hmm.
right? So I decided to see how many common names I could find for Heniochus butterflies. So common names include Heniochus butterfly, black and white Heniochus, peanut butterfly, bannerfish, pennant coral fish, poor man's Morris idol, long fin bannerfish, black and white butterfly fish, schooling bannerfish, and false Morris idol. That's all describing Heniochus. Darn it.
Oh no, hold on. I Defrides. Can Google. Oh, Defrides.
No, not Defrides. The other one, Acuminatus. Heniochus Acuminatus.
That distinction is important.
It is, and that's what we're going to talk about next. Diphrites and Acuminatus are extremely difficult to distinguish. According to many sources, Diphrites is way more reef safe than Acuminatus is. Most likely, when you're seeing one of those that looks a lot like it, you're most likely looking at Acuminatus. And it actually has to do with the way the black and the white interact on the base of the anal fin.
Mm.
Right. When they're subtle, mature, and this is in the 5-inch range, their face shape changes a little bit, and Diphrites is a little bit more blunt than Acuminatus is. But when they're juveniles, or when they're in their adolescent stage, which is usually the stage they are when you buy them in a store, that's not going to be enough of a distinguishing feature. But the black edge, where the black and the white meet in the anal fin, on Diphrites, that black is that fin could be slightly edged in black. And in Acuminatus, it's most likely not going to be slightly edged in black. That's it.
Oh, you really solved it now. I have no confusion.
Oh, good. Now you know how to tell the difference, right?
Yes, I'll never get it wrong.
Right. When in doubt, assume you have Acuminatus.
Yeah, it's probably a safe way to go.
But again, that's a fish that they call both of those reef safe with caution. And there are corals that Acuminatus is going to eat, and there are corals that Acuminatus is going to just completely leave alone. Soft corals are, again, most likely going to be ignored. Fleshy mm-hmm. LPS corals, they're probably going to eat those.
Yeah, there's definitely been a trend of less Fowler tanks and more soft coral tanks taking that place, where it's sort of the halfway between reef tank and no corals.
I think that trend can help with the popularity of butterfly fish.
I hope so.
They should be more popular.
I hope so. Because people realize that soft corals are really easy, and they can also solve some other problems for you.
Yeah. Sometimes we talk about how do you tell if it's a good LPS or a LFS, good local fish store. One of the first butterfly fish I bought when I think I was in college or just out of college. This is pre-internet. This is what's the best source or the most likely source for information? Your local fish store, right? The local fish store, and that's sometimes you still see it. You see miscellaneous butterfly fish for sale.
Oh, God.
Right? If you see that, don't buy any of them and go find a different store, because that's bad. And you see them still, and you see the obligatory corallivores. By the one that I bought was the eight-lined butterfly fish, which is close to the Myers. It is an obligatory corallivore. No, it did not live long. It was a hardy, active. I watched it take food and spit it out all the time. It didn't digest anything.
Right?
Yeah. Obligatory corallivoreous butterfly fish are really common on the reef. You see them all the time. I saw many, many, many pairs of them diving in Thailand and snorkeling in Hawaii. That means they're easy to catch and they're pretty. So collectors, the people that go catch the fish for us, catch them often and try to sell them to wholesalers or to exporters.
Right? Mm-hmm.
That's being reduced because the exporters aren't buying them as often, because there shouldn't be a market for these fish. But they still sometimes show up as miscellaneous butterfly fish. Those are going to be obligatory crew levels. Avoid them. Avoid, look at the list of obligatory coolivores. If you see any of those for sale in an LFS, find a new LFS. Don't assume they found one that's eating. It might actually take food. It won't survive. How should we warn people or excite people about butterfly fish?
I don't know. This conversation just makes me lament again that the only resources most people have to learn about saltwater fish are places that are selling saltwater fish. Like, if we had a seriously fish for saltwater fish, mm-hmm. butterflies would be more popular.
I think you're right.
If you could just find this is what it eats. Mm-hmm. Like, I can look up what a freshwater fish eats mm-hmm. easily. Mm-hmm. But you can't. Like,
Gerald Allen's book.
Exactly.
Yeah. Gerald Allen's book written in 1985. And all of the information that I looked for in this book, I cross-referenced and could find, yep, it's accurate. Even though it was written in 1985. This grid is really cool. There's Chaetodon linealatus, which is one of the obligatory krillivores, and it's got an X in the coral mark. And oh no, that's not the one. Sorry, that's got an X in omnivore as well. Myers, there we go. X in that it eats corals. So it's the categories are corals, sponges and tunicates, crabs, worms, and inverts, plankton, algae, omnivore, and unknown. Yeah, and Myers butterfly, the only X is in coral. That's it. So its only known food is live coral. And as you go through, you can see, here's a list of three of them in a row, right? Ornatissimus, which is the ornate butterfly. Now it's just Ornatus, but was Ornatissimus at that point. Only eats coral. That's it. It's interesting when they put an X in omnivore, and that's the only X. It only eats anything.
Yeah.
Technically is what that means.
It doesn't eat worms or algae or sponges. Yeah, it just eats something.
Anything.
Anything.
Yeah. The Meyer or the Miliaris butterfly, which I believe is the lemon seed or something like that. That's one that I would put at a similar hardiness level as a Klein's. Omnivore.
Did you check if any of these are still in print?
No, I didn't.
You can usually find aquarium books somewhere, but sometimes they're still being made.
Yeah.
I will put in the description of this podcast a list of the resources we've talked about, including the YouTube videos and talks we've talked about here.
That'd be great. Yeah, that'd be great. And if you see some Gerald Allen books lying around, I got to hear him talk. He is the one who did the original scientific description for Bengay cardinals.
Didn't he also do like 100 other species?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Anytime you see some species or some genus Alleni, that's named after Gerald Allen. Like Allen's damsels,
mm-hmm.
right? Named after Gerald Allen.
Which is insane to me because you're not allowed to name something after yourself. So that means he named like 100 species and then like 20 other people came along and said, let's name a species after him.
Yeah, there's probably a Burgessi and an Alleni. So Warren Burgess probably named one after Gerald Allen, and Gerald Allen probably named one after Warren Burgess. That's, you know, those two guys were kind of doing the same thing at the same time.
Allen has a damsel, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would be interested to see who did the description on it. And I would, like, I'd take a wager that it was Warren Burgess.
Okay, let's see if we can find it.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yep. And then the Chaetodon burgessi. Like, I'm wondering if that was Gerald Allen, the description on that one.
Let's see. You guys can keep going if you want to.
All right. Well, I think we're getting close.
Okay.
Right? Did you guys?
Yeah, this was very insightful to me. This is not...
This is a fun one. It's fun to do one that we don't know anything about.
Well, it's a clade that I've very much avoided. I don't really go for these like flat fishes, like the tangs, the butterflies, the mm-hmm. angels, like a lot of people do. I get the appeal. It's just, if you haven't noticed, I like thin, skinny fish, dart fishes, fire fishes, yeah. Dottybacks. But this was fun. This makes me want to try some more here.
Yeah. So there's easy ones, there's hard ones, and there's kind of ones in between. The ones in between...
It was Burgess.
Was it?
Perfect. I'm looking up the Chaetodon.
Love it.
Burgess. by Alan and Stark.
Yep, there we go.
You scientists. Yeah. You're so goofy.
I know, right? That's classic. I like that. Yeah, so there's butterfly fish out there that if you look at Scott Michael's book, look at the ones that are threes. If you're, you know, I am a dedicated hobbyist. I've been doing this for 5 or 6 years or longer, and I've got some room to experiment with. Take on some of those that are a three, but take a lot of time to research which one of those you really want to do. I've had a couple of people pitch ideas to me for getting one of the obligatory coolivores, and their pitch wasn't good enough. I'm not saying you can't make the pitch that I would order you in an obligatory coolivore, but no one's successfully done it yet.
People should be trying.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. These are not, most of them are not threatened species.
Here's the reality. If people are putting as much effort as they are into figuring out non-photosynthetic corals.
Mm-hmm. True.
Butterfly fishes deserve as much attention to try and figure that out. Right. I fully believe that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Or even if people are putting this much energy into captive breeding some sensitive species, maybe we should be learning how to keep some wild caught ones too.
Well, yeah. All this goes back to the reality for me is that, and I've said this many times on the podcast, I think whatever we have and we're breeding in the next 10 years is what we're going to have. And if we don't figure it out sooner rather than later, we're not going to have it. So like whatever butterflies we don't figure out tomorrow, we're not going to have next year.
I think that's a possibility.
Yeah. I hope someone someday makes us prove that we can keep alive the things that we're importing too. Like,
that's
wishful thinking, but even if you were not getting mass bans, we should at least not be able to keep things we're just going to kill. So maybe we should figure out how to keep them alive.
You'll notice some things that I left out of this podcast. I didn't talk about tank size. Mm-hmm. I definitely talked about you can't put 5 of them in 100 gallon, right? There are butterfly fish that I would put in a 75. There are butterfly fish I wouldn't put in a 180. We didn't talk about feeding those ones that are easy to feed. They're easy to feed. You're going to want to do research on them specifically. But a Klein's butterfly has a different diet regimen than a pyramid does, even though both of them fit into the easy category. We didn't talk much about tank mates. Pyramid butterflies can get along with a lot of other fish than a Klein's butterfly can, right? So this is a precursor. This is something to either say, nope, not going to try it, or yep, I want to learn more about butterfly fish to see if I can keep them. But I think that those of you that do are going to get pretty excited about butterfly fish because they're amazing, gorgeous fish and worthy of being kept.
Mm-hmm. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Most butterflies, once they're healthy, they have a lot of attitude. They have a lot of character.
Yep. Closely related to angels in that same group. Yeah.
Well, if you guys have some butterfly fish, I hope you post some pictures in the Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast listeners group, because that's been really fun to see some people's tanks. Make sure to get out to watercolorsaquariumgallery.com and at least take a look, see if there's anything that you're going to be interested in. And do we have any other things we need to tell them?
No, we got a lot of great questions in for our questions podcast coming up. So we're looking forward to that one. We're gonna record that one soon. So that should be out next week.
We did get an email from a Blackwater specialist here in Michigan. I am just putting this in here to let him know. I am planning on looking at your CV. I am going to read some of your papers and I will bring them up on the podcast. It's just not this one because I was not ready yet, but I'm really excited to look into that.
Cool.
That scientist had some very kind words for us and I appreciate that.
Yeah. And if you do have anything that you want to share privately with us, information you want to send on, you can email podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com.
Yeah. Otherwise, thank you so much for listening. Let's have lots of fun and keep those hands wet.